Welcome to episode 6 of the Man of Starch podcast for Monday, August 25th, 2008. Your source for the polite musings of a real-life high school English teacher and drama coach from beautiful Mariposa, California. In this week's podcast, pod-safe music from Ash Eel and A Beggar's Opera, a roundup of the top news stories in education and how they will affect you, a review of what Man of Starch has been watching, including Wicked Live in Chicago, the television series Freaks and Geeks, and the DVD recording of The Reduced Shakespeare Company. Highlights from this week in history. A calendar of events for all those Central Valley kids complaining that there is nothing to do in this town. The cool techie site of the week. We will look at the origins of the term spam in our segment Etymology for a Semi-Literate World. And we'll close out on a lighter note with highlights from our small town sheriff's daily log. But let's get started with our first pod-safe song from Jamindo.com, a happy French song entitled Moi J'aime by the Paris band Ash Eel.
Moi j'aime les filles en jupe, les jeunes qui sortent à la fin de l'hiver. J'aime voir le soleil se lever pendant que je prends mon café. Comme dans un village de Provence, bercé par les saveurs intenses. Une balade pour faire le marché avant le Ricard de la demi-journée. Moi j'aime pêcher à la mouche, à condition d'avoir des touches. J'aime aussi aller pique-niquer, seulement si je suis accompagné d'une jolie fille aux cheveux longs, une petite salade à l'estragon. Tout l'après-midi allongé à regarder les nuages passer. Moi j'aime quand arrive l'heure de rentrer pour accueillir les invités. On se fait des sardines grillées. Où j'aime ces instants magnifiés par un joli coucher de soleil qui éclaire son visage. Quelle merveille! Des instants à photographier, à garder pour me réveiller, revenir à la réalité. C'est lundi, il faut se lever, et tu n'es pas à mes côtés. C'était si bon d'imaginer toute une journée à t'embrasser. Hey! Aujourd'hui, le soleil brille, j'espère que je vais te rencontrer. J'espère que je vais te retrouver. Ta-dun-tun, ta-dun-tun. J'espère que je vais te rencontrer. Ta-dun-tun, ta-dun-tun. Ta-dun-tun. Aujourd'hui, le soleil brille. J'espère que je vais te rencontrer.
That was Moi J'aime by Osh Eel. After this first week of school, I thought a nice happy song was appropriate, keeping us in an upbeat mood for a year of endless possibilities. However, for those of you feeling a little down about having to show up to school again, I'll have a nice depressing song at the end of the podcast. The Man of Starch returned to school this week, 2 days of meetings Monday and Tuesday, and the students returned on Wednesday. Much larger classes, for my English classes at least this term, we had about 70 additional students register to our school than we expected. So I've got 35 in both of my English classes, largest classes I've had, but I know that there are some history teachers with 40 plus in their classes, so I can't complain. Everybody seems happy so far. I welcomed back my advanced drama class, many of the students I've had for 4 years in a row. And we're looking at 3 plays of this year. I read over 110 minute plays this summer, which seems to be a very popular form right now. Kind of got popular in the 70s and 80s. And there are different companies that put on a whole slew of 10 minute play competitions. So I found 8 10 minute plays we're going to put on for the first show in November. We're going to call it 8 Under 10. I'm looking at doing the non-musical version written by C.G. Bond of Sweeney Todd in March, along with some of Sondheim's songs presented by the chorus. And I'm hoping to do some children's theater at the end of the year to kind of lighten things up in April. And I'm looking for a decent translation of Alice in Wonderland. And now on to the education news of the week. And this is a story that came out on Wednesday. I presented to my students in English on Friday for them to be able to do some controversial subject writing. Corporal punishment in school. More than 200,000 students were spanked or paddled in U.S. schools during the past school year, human rights groups reported on Wednesday. Every public school needs effective methods of discipline, but beating kids teaches violence and it doesn't stop bad behavior, wrote Alice Farmer, the author of a joint report from Human Rights Watch and the American Civil Liberties Union. Corporal punishment discourages learning, fails to deter future misbehavior, and at times even provokes it, Ms. Farmer went on to say. Corporal punishment in schools remains legal in 21 U.S. states and is used frequently in 13, including Missouri, Kentucky, Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, and Florida. The highest percentage of students receiving corporal punishment was in Mississippi with 7.5% of students, and the highest number was in Texas with 48,197 students getting paddled last year. In addition, corporal punishment can be linked to poverty and lack of resources. For instance, the report said that teachers may have overcrowded classrooms and lack of resources, such as counselors to assist with particularly disruptive students or classroom dynamics. Overall, 223,190 students received corporal punishment from 2006 to 2007. That number is actually down from 342,038 students in 2000 to 2001. The punishment is disproportionately applied to black students, according to the organizations. During the 2006-2007 school year, for instance, black students made up 17.1% of the nationwide student population, but 35.6% of those paddled at schools. In addition, special education students with mental and physical disabilities were more likely to receive corporal punishment, according to the ACLU. And the article goes on from there. Luckily in California, this has been abolished for quite some time. This was a great subject for me to bring up with my students because they got involved. I think too often we don't look at nonfiction and news stories in English. We just stick to the literature. It's a great way for them to form a thesis statement. And I would say probably the vast majority of my students were against corporal punishment in schools. But even so, I told them, play the devil's advocate. Try taking the other side of it. Look at the evidence in the article. The article does go on with a couple of people who are for corporal punishment in elementary school, not necessarily in junior and high school. And I said, look at those arguments and try to play the devil's advocate and try to convince yourself in your paper against what your original thoughts were. And that really lets you look at every aspect and every angle of an argument. And there was another story that made national news this week, which kind of shocked me that it was national news. Girl suspended for pink hair. School officials have suspended a Missouri middle schooler because she dyed her hair pink. Mountain Grove Middle School student Amelia Robbins said she dyed her hair pink in honor of her father, who died of cancer when she was 6 years old. She says that to her, pink is the cancer color. The 12-year-old student said that when she finished sixth grade with pink streaks in her hair, school administrators warned her not to continue wearing the color. But with her mother's permission, Amelia dyed all of her hair pink, and her school year ground to a halt just days after it started. Like many public schools, school officials at Amelia's school have the final say over whether a student is causing a distraction. They apparently believe that her hair color was disruptive. A local TV station's version of the story quoted Principal J.T. Hale as saying that when something like this happens, we try to address it and curtail it as soon as we can. I don't really know if that creates a distraction. I have a student of mine who dyes her hair many different colors, sits right in front in my English class. And I think perhaps if the teachers were keeping the students' interest, pink hair would not be a distraction. And now it's time for the Man of Starch reviews. I usually try to talk about things that I have watched and that I have read. Unfortunately, I've not gotten a lot of reading done as I've been getting ready for the school year, but I have a lot that I have been watching, especially in the evenings. And last time I reported to you, I was about to leave for Chicago. My wife was having some training in Indianapolis, and we were going to spend a weekend up in Chicago, and had a great trip, despite the fact that our flights were canceled coming and going. But I was able to see Wicked in Chicago. And I reported about 3 weeks ago to you folks, and I'm going to try to keep this up twice a month. I think that every week is just too much for me to handle with the school year, but I think twice a month will be enough. So we saw Wicked in Chicago. Wicked is a musical with songs and lyrics by Stephen Schwartz and a book by Winnie Holtzman. The story is based on the best-selling novel Wicked, The Life and Times of the Wicked Witch of the West by Gregory Maguire, a reimagining of L. Frank Baum's classic story, The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, from the perspective of the witches of the Land of Oz. Wicked tells the story of Elphaba, the future Wicked Witch of the West, and her relationship with Glinda, the Good Witch of the North. Their friendship struggles through their opposing personalities and viewpoints, rivalry over the same love interest, their reactions to the wizard's corrupt government, and ultimately, Elphaba's public fall from grace. The plot is set mostly before Dorothy's arrival from Kansas, and includes several references to the well-known scenes and dialogue in the 1939 film The Wizard of Oz. And I have to say, this is a soundtrack that really grows on you. I bought the soundtrack 2 weeks before we went. I knew that we were going to be going. And at first I said, oh, there's one or two songs that are kind of catchy. And after a while, the whole theme of the show really kind of grabs you. There's kind of a 1970s feel to some of the songs. And now I like pretty much every song on the soundtrack. But it's one of those things you have to listen to and kind of get used to. I ended up getting my tickets from Orbitz.com. I added it on to our hotel package in Chicago, and all it said was that they guaranteed you seats in a couple of sections that were down near the front of the theater, and the tickets were, I believe, about $86 for the show that we went to. And so I figured, okay, you know, hopefully we'll have okay seats, not the nosebleed section. We were right there in the artist circle, which is the very lowest balcony. It's just four rows. We were two rows back in the middle, had excellent seats, probably the best seats I've ever had for a show, and I think the tickets were probably $30 cheaper than if I bought them from Ticketmaster. So I recommend Orbitz.com for just adding on tickets to shows. They usually give you that option at the end of putting your package together. There's a huge use of props and sets in this show. It's very visually stunning. It didn't get great reviews to begin with, but it's really become a crowd favorite. And Wicked returns to San Francisco. That's actually where it got its start, was in San Francisco, I believe, in 2005. And Wicked will return to San Francisco in late January 2009, playing at the Orpheum Theater. Tickets are available already online if you search for Wicked San Francisco. And it will continue to play at least for 3 or 4 months, and sometimes they give these things extended runs if they continue to make money. I wanted to talk about a television series a lot of my students missed that came out around 1999 and 2000. Most of my students were between 14 and 17. Sometimes I'll make references and they just look at me, you know, with blank stares, and I realize, oh, you guys are young. I called someone Doogie Howser today in class, and they just all stared at me as if, who is Doogie Howser? And I had to explain the television series to them. Television series I'd like to talk about only lasted for one season, but it was called Freaks and Geeks, and it's one of those rare television series that actually gets high school students right. It was produced by Judd Apatow, who's now famous for so many kind of raunchy films, and this was a network television series, and really did a great job, And so often I'll watch a show and realize, yeah, that's written by a 40-year-old. That doesn't really speak truly to how students talk. And Freaks and Geeks just kind of nailed it just head on. The show centered on a teenage girl, Lindsay, and her brother Sam, both attending McKinley High School during 1980 to 1981, a school year in town of Chippewa, Michigan, a fictional suburb of Detroit. The show's starting point was Lindsay's transition from her life as an academically proficient student, star mathlete, and proper young girl, with Millie as her like-minded best friend, to an army jacket-wearing teenager who hangs out with troubled slackers. Her relationships with her new friends and the friction they cause with her parents and with her own self-image. From one central strand of the show, and the other follows Sam and his group of geeky friends as they navigate a very different part of the social universe as they try to fit in. As I said, very realistic vision of high school, and it is available on Netflix as well as at Amazon.com. And lastly, I want to talk about a DVD that I use on my during my first week of basic drama every year. The Complete Works of William Shakespeare Abridged, and it was written by the Reduced Shakespeare Company. This is a parody of the plays written by William Shakespeare, with all of them being performed in shortened form during the show by only three actors. Typically, the actors use their real names and play themselves rather than certain characters. The fourth wall is completely non-existent in the performance, with the actors speaking directly to the audience during much of the play, and some scenes involve audience participation. The director and stage crew also may be directly involved in the performance and become characters themselves. As I said, the play was written by the Reduced Shakespeare Company and first performed at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival in 1987, and later played at the Criterion Theatre in London, where it ran for 9 record-breaking years. It has become one of the world's most popular shows, playing frequently in a variety of languages. It is notable for holding the self-proclaimed world record for the shortest ever performance of Hamlet, clocking in at 43 seconds. Great thing about this show is it's PG, it is filmed in front of a live audience, and the house lights are up for most of the show so the actors can see the audience. And when you watch the DVD, it's a great way to show students the kind of that theory or the idea of the breaking the fourth wall when they're interacting and talking to the audience, as well as showing audience reaction. And I use it as a tool to show students the appropriate way to act in a theater when you are watching live actors as opposed to watching something like a film or watching TV at home. And now it's time for This Week in History. August 25th, 1718, New Orleans was founded by French settlers. August 26th, 1939, first televised baseball game. August 27th, 1859, the first successful oil well hit black gold in America. August 28th, 1963, 200,000 marched on Washington, D.C. to demand civil rights. August 29th, 2005, Hurricane Katrina hit. August 30th, 30 B.C., Cleopatra took her life under threat of Roman capture. And August 31st, 1997, Princess Diana died. And I'd like to add, we have two New Orleans stories here, the founding of New Orleans and Hurricane Katrina hitting New Orleans. And just this week I heard about a new comic strip called A.D., New Orleans After the Deluge. It's a true story told in 14 parts about 6 different people, Leo and Michelle, Denise, Hamid, Kevin, and the Doctor, who escape and survive Hurricane Katrina. It's written by Josh Newfield. And you can read the entire series from the start at www.smithmag.net. smithmag.net. Later on this year, the series will be released in graphic novel form. And now our calendar of events for all those Central and Northern California kids wondering, is there anything to do in this town? And I'm really going to focus on close to home this week. I found a lot of great things within about 2 hours of where I live here in Mariposa, California. The first is Chicago, the Broadway tour of Chicago, August 29th through September 1st, 2008. It's coming to the Gallo Center for the Arts in Modesto. And this, I haven't been here yet, but they've got a lot of great shows coming up. 5 or 6 Broadway shows and a lot of smaller things coming out to their smaller venue. This is a story of murder, greed, corruption, violence, exploitation, adultery, and treachery. All those things we hold near and dear to our hearts. So begins the musical Chicago, and creators John Kander, Fred Ebb, and Bob Fosse never back off from their bold and sinister promise. Chicago is the kiss-and-tell story of Roxy Hart, a chorus girl who kills her lover as a career move, Billy Flynn, a sharp lawyer who turns Roxy into a celebrity, and Velma Kelly, a dancing jailbird with an ear for headlines and an eye for talent. Winner of 6 1997 Tony Awards, including Best Musical Revue, Chicago is a loving look back at vaudeville, a timely satire of the justice system, and a reminder of what great theater can be. I saw this a couple of years ago in Sacramento, and I highly recommend it. It's very different from the film. You actually have the band on stage, very minimal sets, but a great show overall. And I recommend looking up the Gallo Center for the Arts online. Just search for Gallo Center, and you'll see their entire calendar of events. They just had an opening night gala with Bernadette Peters, the star of so many films, including Mel Brooks films. She's done a lot of Sondheim musicals on Broadway, Into the Woods, things like that. Unfortunately, the tickets were about $500. Since it was a fundraiser, I wasn't able to attend, but they have a lot of shows that are very affordable. This show I was looking, the tickets are between $40 and $80, and most of their shows you can get the cheap seats around $17 to $18. The Man of Starch has a birthday coming up next month, and my wife is going to take me to Walking with Dinosaurs live. I really got into Walking with Dinosaurs, the BBC series, and this thing looks amazing with a lot of puppets and animatronics. And it's coming to the Save Mart Center in Fresno, savemartcenter.com, September 17th through the 21st. You might have thought you were 65 million years too late to experience a show in which you walk with dinosaurs, but thanks to an unprecedented marriage of science and animatronics, the legendary creatures are roaming arenas across North America. Almost all the dinosaurs in the show were created to be life-size, which is hard to appreciate unless you're actually in the arena. The largest is the Brachiosaurus. She measures 36 feet tall and 56 feet long. But creating 17 life-size dinosaurs is only half the feat the show's creators pulled off. "It's been the most amazing job for me," creature creator Sonny Tilders says of the lifelike Walking with Dinosaurs, which is based on the award-winning BBC TV series. $20 million budget for this show, and you can check out some clips at dinosaurlive.com. At the Staples Center, September 25th through 28th, if you're living in Southern California, and as I said, Save Mart Center in Fresno, September 17th through the 21st. Tickets start at $27 and go all the way up to $70. And lastly, there's just a blip out there of a story of a performer coming that I've always wanted to see. It's not until April 25th, 2009, but David Sedaris, one of my favorite authors, is coming to speak at Modesto Junior College. He only does a few shows every year in California, and usually it's down at my alma mater, UCLA, and it's just too far for me to drive. But Modesto Junior College just recently opened up a new theater, and they're going to be featuring David Sedaris. No word on ticket prices yet. I'm sure they're going to go fast. Details that I've found so far are at mjc.edu. And their description reads, "An evening with David Sedaris. We'll bring this best-selling humorous author to speak on campus on Saturday, April 25th at 7 p.m. in the auditorium. Sedaris, known for his sardonic wit and incisive social critiques, has become one of America's preeminent humor writers. The great skill with which he slices through cultural euphemisms and political correctness proves that Sedaris is a master of satire and one of the most observant writers addressing the human condition today. His most recent book, When You Are Engulfed in Flames, hit bookshelves this summer. And his other works include Me Talk Pretty One Day, Barrel Fever, Holidays on Ice, as well as collections of personal essays, and Naked. His original radio pieces can often be heard on National Public Radio's This American Life. And in 2001, Sedaris became the third recipient of the Thurber Prize for American Humor." Now it's time for the cool techie site of the week. This week's tech site is keepvid.com. Download and save videos directly from YouTube, Google, Metacaf, PutFile, and more. Simply copy and paste. Saves time wasted waiting for loading and buffering, especially at school where we are all on the same server and downloads can lag if multiple teachers are using the internet. It converts them into MP4s that can be played in QuickTime or using iTunes. I found this very useful. There's so many times I want to use a video off of YouTube, and I've got the class all ready to go. I've got them amped up because they're getting to watch something from the internet. Digital projector's on, and I click on it on YouTube, and it just loads and loads and loads. You take that address up at the top and you plug it into keepvid.com. It'll download it to your hard drive. You can use it anytime you like. So keepvid.com is the cool techie site of the week, and it is free. free. Etymology for a semi-literate world. This week's word is spam. Not the luncheon meat, but the kind of email you get. It is widely believed that the term spam is derived from the 1970s spam sketch of the BBC television comedy series Monty Python's Flying Circus. The sketch is set in a cafe where nearly every item on the menu includes spam luncheon meat. As the waiter recites the spam-filled menu, a chorus of Viking patrons drowns out all conversations with a song repeating spam, 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 lovely spam, wonderful spam, hence spamming the dialogue. The excessive amount of spam mentioned in the sketch is a reference to British rationing during World War II. Spam was one of the few meat products that avoided rationing and hence was widely available. In the 1980s, the term was adopted to describe certain abusive users who frequented BBSs and MUDs, who would repeat spam a huge number of times to scroll other users' text off the screen. In early chat room services like PeopleLink and the early days of AOL, they actually flooded the screen with quotes from the Monty Python spam sketch. This was used as a tactic by insiders of a group that wanted to drive newcomers out of the room so the usual conversation could continue. It was also used to prevent members of rival groups from chatting. For instance, Star Wars fans often invaded Star Trek chat rooms, filling the space with blocks of text until the Star Trek fans left. This act, previously called flooding or trashing, came to be known as spamming. The term was soon applied to a large amount of text broadcasted by many users.
Spam, 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 spam.
And now it's time for our Sheriff's Daily Log. A woman was wandering around the Miner's Inn all night wearing sunglasses. A bat was in a pool on Harris Road. Sheep were on Highway 140. Children were playing on a roof on Bullion Street. Someone called to report feeling an earthquake and to say, quote, "The sky is shooting meteors, too." Two teen boys were involved in a shoving match at the Arts Park. A complaint came in that parents who drop their children off at football practice drive too fast. A very weak, very small owl was in a box on Country Park Road. 50 goats strayed into a yard on Boyer Road. Illegal spear fishing was reported at Cable Rock. And lastly, 4 chickens were on the courthouse lawn on Highway 49 South. So, what have we learned this week? If you live in California, be thankful. We don't allow corporal punishment in our schools. However, 21 other states do. So if you're a troublemaker, beware of the South. Having pink hair should not make the national news. The next time you receive spam email, just try not to think of the Monty Python song. I dare you. There's no need to sit and wait for your favorite videos of people hurting themselves by doing backflips off of retaining walls to buffer. Just download them using keepvid.com. Graphic novels are once again using their unique form to tackle difficult subject matter. The Man of Starch turns 29 soon. Cash and gifts are appreciated. Sometimes TV shows do get it right when trying to portray teenagers. And finally, if you want to prove you're a real man, nothing is more macho than getting in a shoving match at the Arts Park. That's all the time we have this week for the Man of Starch podcast. We're going to leave you with a depressing little number from a beggar's opera entitled Eulalia. Good luck to all of you out there heading back to school, and until next time, this is the Man of Starch signing off.
'Cause it's crazy, I know. That they took her life just to remonstrate with the magistrates and why. And she crashed against the stone with her body torn to the bone, screaming out, I feel a sun alone. For it is in this very west lies the place this might rest, in the town which gave her birth, Saint Eulalia. In her. Cause it's crazy, I know, that they took her life just to remonstrate with the magistrates and laugh from her mouth. It is said, now a devil did a set. She lay virginal, half naked in the snow. Snow. For it is in this very west lies the place this matter rests. And Eulalia is her name, Saint Eulalia. Straight with